As much as over the last 30-some-odd years, I've sort of been obsessed with Buddhism, and particularly the practice of the Dharma. But I also have found that the world is really full of other thinkers, that there, in the last many, many years, there's been different people from different traditions, philosophical, religious, spiritual, whatever you want to call it, who have had really, really interesting ideas. And there's lots of ways in which we can understand some of the ideas of the world to better understand ourselves. Although the one thing about the Buddha and his teachings that stand out that nobody else really says is that regardless of what you think about your life or what you think about the world, that the mind has to be trained. That this mind experience is going to require some effort and some work, and that we really need to train and to become to understand this mind. And nobody else really says that, actually. So he sort of sticks out as this person with these brilliant ideas, but also provides a very verifiable methodology for how this can be done. And I'm very grateful for that. So I want to talk a little bit this evening about these heart practices or these Brahmaviharas, how they can be integrated into awareness practices, into mindfulness practices. And in many ways, I believe, can also be seen as yet just another method for how we could liberate ourselves. I think there's many methods for how we can liberate ourselves. There's lots of different practices and theories within the Buddhist tradition. And, you know, no model is perfect. Some models are useful. And we kind of find our way through these different kinds of practices. The one thing about the Brahmavihara practices, these are practices of kindness, compassion, joy and equanimity, is interesting because of all the teachings in the Dharma, this is the one teaching that really every school of Buddhism agrees upon. Whether you're in the Theravada, the Zen, the various schools, and also the various schools of Tibetan Buddhism, these teachings play a central role in the process of awakening and the process of liberation within every system. I think that's interesting. That everybody has recognized the importance of cultivating these qualities. And sometimes we can think of the practice or hear the practice in words like, you know, like liberation, enlightenment, awakening. Sometimes these words for me carry a little bit too much of a like, yeah, well, we'll see about that. You know, but I think in a very basic way, one of the things that we're all looking for is just some freedom. You know, to be able to move through life and to move through the world without having this kind of psychologically encumbered internal mechanism that holds us back from so many different things. And this sense of freedom that is, and Jameson did a wonderful job pointing this out, that this is really an inside job. This is going to require some work and some training. And I think when we think about the word freedom, we don't always acknowledge that there's really two sides to the coin. And that one of them, because we live in America and, you know, freedom, you know, is that we focus too much on the free to. We want to be free to, you know, do what we want to do. We want to be free to make the choices and live the way that we want to live. And that's all fine and good. But the freedom that we're talking about in this practice, the freedom that the Buddha is speaking about, is freedom from. We want to be free from these internal ways in which we feel limited, we feel encumbered, we feel hindered. One of the ways that I find in the work that I do with people, the phrase that often people say that I think in modern culture is rampant, is when people are presented with a challenge or a difficult choice in their life, they usually say, I can't because, fill in the blank. I can't because. And that all might be actually true, right? Sometimes we can't because. But a lot of times that statement is so reflexive, we don't even spend a little bit of time going, well, maybe I need to actually examine that, because we do. We don't feel free. And I think for many of us, I know it's true for me and a lot of people that I talk to, one of the things that we want to be free from the most is just the ways in which our mind is just so harsh on us. the judgmental, the critical, the not good enough, the better do, the how come you didn't, the shoulds, all of that, that kind of way in which we're just really, really hard on ourselves. It's very harsh. And the experience of mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness, sometimes can be feel like it makes things worse because we get a really deep dosage of that. We see that very, very clearly, and that can be kind of brutal. You know, there's this experience people have, just isn't true for everybody, but generally what happens when people come into a practice like mindfulness, whether they come into an insight retreat or an insight group or just like a mindfulness class at the library or MBSR, is usually the first thing we get is a kind of big hit of relief. We get this like, oh, there's a sense of relief. I didn't know there was an escape hatch. You know? And usually not too long after that, after that relief, there's initial waking up to like, oh my God, my mind is really kind of mean and unhelpful and critical and judgmental. And then it's like, okay, I'm mindful of that. Now what? Right? And so there is a way in which these awareness practices that we've been doing here in mindfulness is very important, because we certainly do need, part of training the mind is we do need to understand the mind. And there's a story that Joseph Goldstein tells that I love, where when he was first in India, he was so excited about this stuff, you know, because he's, I guess, in the, you know, early 70s, and he's running around India learning about these ancient practices. And he has this teacher named Munindraji, who studied in the Burmese tradition. Actually, he studied with Mahasi Sayadaw, I believe. And Joseph, of course, is following him around, just torturing him with endless questions about this, that, and the other thing. And finally, Munindraji stops, and he says, if you want to understand your mind, sit down and observe it. You know, to sit and to know that you're sitting, the whole of the Dharma will be revealed. And that there's so much that comes just from the observational quality of the mind, the ability to see into. I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't even know you could look into the damn thing. You know, I thought it was all this way. The idea that you can actually look into the mind was really, really profound. But then, you know, you look into the mind and you're like not totally thrilled about what you see. Maybe I need to rethink this whole meditation thing. And not for everybody, but for a lot of us, for me for sure, that understanding the mind, understanding the clinging and the craving and the ways in which I paint myself into these corners really wasn't quite enough. I didn't feel free. I felt freer. I still felt encumbered. I still felt like there was something that wasn't resolving. There was the circle wasn't being completed. And even though I was introduced to these Brahmavihara metta practices right from the beginning, I really didn't give them or start to give them any kind of sincere attempt till about maybe 10 years in, at least. Mostly because the idea of, and I don't blame anybody for this, but I remember that there was two things that scared the hell out of me. First of all, the word loving kindness felt too impossible. I was like, yeah, I don't have that. And then a lot of the common phrases was, may I be happy. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I have that either. You guys had me at suffering. What's this happiness talk now? And I remember trying to do those phrases early on in IMS, and I would sit there and say, may I be happy. And I'd say it a couple times, and my mind would say back to me, I'm not happy. And I'd say, may I be happy? And my mind would say, I'm not happy. And I'd do it again and say, would you like to know why? And then the whole cascade of argument and confusion would begin, and I would just be like, I'm out of here. And I kind of just gave up on it. You know? It's hard. This is hard, you know? We think that, you know, these awareness practices are hard, but when we're trying to get into this deeper threshold of our experience, it can be very challenging. So once we get to this point where we start to understand a little bit more about the mind, we start to see actually it does need to be related to. And that's what Jameson was talking about yesterday, this befriending, the befriending of the mind. You know, the mind can become a friendly companion. Is your mind a friendly companion? Sometimes. Sometimes not so much. Right? It's that befriending quality. And when we talk about this word mind. It's an interesting word because the word, I think, is both obvious and completely mysterious. Like when I say your mind, you pretty much know what I'm talking about, don't you? But on some level, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Right? It's got that connotation to it. And in the modern sense of mind, in the Western sense of mind, it's undergone two things that I think have been unhelpful, that have been a big departure from the way it's understood in the early Buddhist tradition, or really in the full Buddhist tradition, is that it's become very psychologized for many good reasons. We have psychology and therapy, and we understand the mind in this way, but we're kind of limited to its, not its full capacity. Generally, it doesn't include the body or the emotional system. It's also been really pathologized, endlessly pathologized. I once heard of this manual they use in the clinical world called the DSM-5, which is a diagnostic of mental disorders. And apparently like 80% of the population would qualify for some kind of mental disorder. Not helpful. And then you have this Buddhist literature, which is like the opposite of that. It's like pointing to the kind of upside of that. And so the word that the Buddha uses, probably one of the most important words in the earlier languages, is this word citta, which is really the word that's used for mind. And it encompasses really the whole thing. That's why we say mindfulness. Like in the mindfulness teachings, you notice the body's included. In fact, everything's included. There's nothing on the other side of the wall of mindfulness. And so in the third foundation of mindfulness, in many ways, what we've been practicing here is actually described as mindfulness of citta. And this other word that you know probably pretty well, that is a good word because it comes from the canon I like. You know this word monkey mind? Kapichitta. It's fun to say. My kapichitta, the monkey mind, the untrained mind that's kind of all over the place. But we see that the mind is, or this citta quality of the mind, it's generative, meaning it can kind of rise up ideas and memories. It can kind of bring things up, right? Have you noticed things coming up in your mind? It never seems to stop. It's like an endless scroll. Like I like to say, I've never ever gotten to the point in meditation, ever once in 30 years, where my mind ever said to me, I got nothing. Sorry, Dave, I am fresh out. You know? It's always got another interesting thing for me to know about myself. Right? So it has that generative quality. But also the other quality it has is that really kind of brings us into these Brahma-viharas, this relational capacity, is it has a resonance to it. It can resonate with experience, largely through feeling. Like we feel things resonate with us. And the weird thing about it that's so interesting is it actually can resonate with itself. The mind can relate to itself. Have you ever thought your way into feeling terrible? Have you ever entertained a series of thoughts that left you in some kind of emotional experience? It's like it's interesting. It blows my mind that the thing can create a world, move into that world, and then have feelings about that world. And none of that is actually happening right now, you know? So we really can get a sense of how dynamic and how rich this whole thing is. And when we start to understand it, we can relate to it, and we can kind of learn those simultaneously, which I think is kind of a better way to go, to learn how to do this in tandem. And so metta, the Brahma-viharas, just to say a little bit about that word, because I always found that, I always kind of had a little bit of resistance or aversion to the word Brahma-vihara, because it just sounds religious, doesn't it? Like, Brahma-vihara. Why does he choose this term? I think there's some interesting context here I think that's helpful. Is in the world of ancient India, the world that the Buddha lived and grew up in and taught in, was a world that was largely ruled by Brahmanism. There were other things going on, but that was kind of like America's kind of mostly Christian. Ancient India was mostly Brahmanism. And that actually, you know how when someone sees, we say, God bless you. A lot of times what they would say in ancient India is say, may you dwell with Brahma. It would be like a nice thing to say if you were departing from a friend or somebody was going through, may you dwell with Brahma. That's what that would be said. It would be kind of a social nicety. And really what that means actually is may you be one with God. And the Buddha says, that's not what it means. That's not what it means at all. He talks about Brahma. Vihara means to dwell or to abide, which is what we do in mindfulness. We dwell and we abide. And he says that we can dwell and to abide, and that the highest, sort of the highest embodiment of the human experience is somebody whose mind can dwell in a heart of kindness, in a heart of compassion, a heart of joy, and a heart of equanimity. And in many ways, that's his way of saying that's what it means to be one with God. And you can take with that what you will. But that's really what he's doing, is he's flipping the language upside on everybody. And also, he's now putting the ball in your court, actually, saying you can train in this way. So these are also, too, let's just be clear, these are also qualities that you already have. They came with the equipment. You know, and the equipment's not great, you know, that it comes with kindness, it comes with anger, it comes with hatred. There's lots of stuff in here that's not so helpful. And so, you know, his general assessment is we want to cultivate the upside of the equipment and we want to kind of let go of the downside. And, you know, that's kind of the whole thing. So it's not whether we have it or don't have it. It's there. And so we want to kind of, so part of the training is to recognize this aspiration, or for me, it's very, very basic. Back to the freedom analogy. I think actually it really just begins when we can recognize for ourselves that we have a desire to be free. Like, I don't feel free, but I want to be. I don't feel okay, but I want to be. And that desire, that kind of well-wishing, we could even say sila, sometimes we can even translate metta as goodwill. There's that good wishing of like, oh, I really want to be. And I can assure you, you would not have driven all the way out here and subjected yourself to this for 7 days if you didn't already have that. Nobody slips on a banana peel and finds himself in the Dharma Lodge down at Bayacitos. You know, this is not, you know. Every once in a while we get somebody who signs up at the last minute and doesn't know what they got themselves into. So again, we want to recognize that these are capacities that we can develop. And they're all actually qualities of metta. So I just want to kind of be clear about that, that like metta is kind of the overarching theme, this kind friendliness. And we try to bring this kind friendliness into the present time experience. And then when the experience becomes challenging or unpleasant or painful, that kindness kind of transforms a bit into a caring, which we would call compassion. So when kindness is caring, it's compassion, but it's still kind. It's still kind. Kindness in that caring experience. And that's what we want to develop, because that would be the wise response. Rather than aversion or fear or hatred, it's like, oh, ouch, this hurts a little bit. It's okay. How can I help? Can I be with this part of my experience? And then when the experience is enjoyable or pleasant or good fortunes that we have in our life, the kindness transforms or modulates even into a kind of appreciation. And that appreciation or that gratitude or that joy is still also kind. But the metta has a bit more wisdom now. Right? It knows how to respond to the conditions that are arising in the present time experience. I'll talk more about that tomorrow night. And then when that full fruition arises, when we're able to meet our experience with kindness and meet our pain and our difficulties and our confusion with care and compassion, and our joy and our pleasantness and the good side of our life with gratitude and appreciation, then we get this experience of equanimity, which Jameson did a great job discussing this afternoon. And so in many ways, if you use the analogy of agriculture or cultivation, we could see that metta is the seed and that equanimity is the fruit, right? And that we develop that. And there's actually a lovely poem from the Tibetan tradition that goes, from the seed of metta comes the beautiful bloom of compassion to be watered by tears of joy under the cool shade of the tree of equanimity. I love that. And this equanimity is so profound that equanimity even casts shade for the man who comes to chop it down. A kind of heart. And so sometimes we can think about metta as part of the presentation this evening and part of the practice. We'll be trying to see if we can begin to see if we can develop metta as an object. We've been talking about objects a lot, an object of awareness. And generally speaking, we start with, sometimes they're divided up into material objects and immaterial objects. A material object is like a sound of a bird. Can you hear a sound of a bird and connect with that? Super easy. Can you feel the sunlight on your skin? Can you connect with that? Pretty easy, pretty immediate. Can you connect with the sensations of the in-breath, the sensations of the out-breath? Yes, I can do that because those are material objects. They're easy to connect with, which is really helpful when we're trying to be present time awareness. But we also have these immaterial objects, which are kind of more unworldly feelings. They're sometimes these brahmaviharas are called beautiful spiritual emotions. And to say, well, can we also connect with a felt sense of kindness? A little bit more challenging than the sound of the bird, perhaps. But totally possible. So that becomes an immaterial object. It's something that can be known by the mind. That's essentially what an object is in the practice. It's something that the mind can know, it can recognize, connect with. And so it can actually be possible to have an embodied felt sense or even an inclination or maybe even an intuitive sense. And it might even, again, just be this kind of recognizing, God, I want to be happy. I want to be at ease. I want to be free. Maybe it's just that simple. And maybe that's just that seed. So we want to try to maybe see this in a basic sense so that way we can start to cultivate this quality or bring it into the mindfulness awareness practice that we've already been using because it's so beneficial. It's so beneficial. And so to just maybe get a little bit more into some of the mechanics or some of the things that we can maybe recognize so that this quality of kindness isn't too mysterious. But even again, this quality of kindness has that same quality. It's like, you know what it means. It's obvious, right? Kindness, yeah, sure. Friendliness, yeah. It's also very mysterious. It's like, yeah, but where, how do I get the thing I want? And so we can maybe, one of the ways I'll do the practice tonight, one of the easier ways to understand it or to get a felt sense of it is just using the idea of a friend. And in fact, a lot of you know this word. You know this word kalyanamitta? Mitta comes from the Pali, the root word metta. So that word that we use, it's a friend, a good friend. And so being a good friend to ourselves. And when you think of the analogy of being with a friend, which we love. In fact, at this point in my life, there's really nothing I enjoy more than a very open, deep, vulnerable, rich conversation with a friend. To me, that's about as good as it gets. Maybe throw a cup of coffee into it, and that's great. And we like that too, don't we? Just why do we love that experience? Why is that such a meaningful experience? Because it's just all metta exchange, right? And what are these qualities? It's like they're pretty simple. Like the two characteristics that really support the arising and the beholding and the maintaining of metta is attention and interest. So if I haven't seen my friend in a long time, I'm seeing somebody, I'm meeting them for coffee, I'm literally sitting across from them, what's happening is they have my undivided attention for the most part. They have my undivided attention, I have their undivided attention, there's a kind of a connection that happens. There's metta going on. And there's also interest. I'm really interested in what they have to say. I'm interested in their struggle. I'm interested in their joy. I'm interested in how I can help. I'm interested in celebrating with their good fortune. That all almost just becomes, that's so easy to do. The question is, can I actually do that for myself? Right. And then in this quality, this mental state of metta, when you look at, there's a term they use in psychology which kind of denotes the distracted, destructive function of mind, which is usually this word rumination. We ruminate on things. And when they look at rumination, there's four large categories that we ruminate on. And they are past and future, and self and other. Okay. And I notice that when I'm sitting with a friend, I don't get a sense of time. You ever be talking to somebody and 2 hours goes by? It's just time races by. You feel like you've been there for 1 second. Why? because you're in this meta dimension of experience where time is just like gone, right? And the self and other experience goes away. I don't have a strong sense of me being me and them being them. I don't have that kind of polarized like tightness. Now, if I'm sitting with somebody that I don't like and there's conflict, I really have a sense of that, don't I? I'm right, you're wrong. I need to get out of this situation ASAP. Now time becomes real. You know this one? Right? Not meta. Right? And so it's, so when you think about it along these lines, it becomes a little bit easier to understand how this might actually work. And so there is this way in which we can abide in this mindfulness and metta. And I think there are also two sides of the same coin. There is, you know, and I think it's summed up in these instructions, which I love Tejaniya's pith around, am I aware? That's not a complicated question. What am I aware of? So what that does is it brings us into the experience of mindfulness. And then it brings us into the experience of understanding the mind. What am I aware of? I'm aware of sound. I'm aware of sight. I'm aware of worry. I'm aware of fear. Okay, I'm starting to understand, you know, the workings of this seemingly terribly designed contraption. And then the third one, again, is what is the attitude of the mind? In which mind am I? How am I holding this experience? Is there a lot of aversion in the experience? Sometimes, is there wanting? Yeah, there can be. So a lot of times, again, Tejaniya has another book called When Awareness. He says awareness alone is not enough. Right? Awareness alone is not enough. We want to try to foster these relational qualities of at ease. Basic okayness is how Sharon Salzberg describes it now. I wish she'd used basic okayness back in the 90s when I learned this. If they said basic okayness instead of loving kindness, I might have stayed in the room. You know? Sometimes I think Dharma practice is just a gradual lowering of one's expectations. You're like, I'm at the point now, I'm like, okay, basic okayness, like, that's where we're at. You know? Because most of the time, I just basically want to be okay. And a lot of the times, I don't feel that way. I don't feel okay. It's not okay. The world's not going to be okay. It's not going to be okay. Right? So we will do the practice, the guided practice will be very similar to the way that Jameson did it last night. But I will try to help us through this idea of a friend. So what we'll do is... the first bit of the practice will actually bring somebody to mind that we know, somebody that you know, and it can even be like a pet. It can be any being in which when you bring their image, when you bring this person to mind, feeling kindness towards them is just easy. You don't really have to try. It's just like, oh yeah, I'd love to see them right now. Like imagining if they walked through that door right now and you saw them, you'd be like, you know, that kind of feeling. Right, and so sometimes we can be helpful to generate that and to offer goodwill, wishes of kindness and goodwill towards that person to try to see if we can maybe prime the pump a little bit and then see if we can. So there's that external kind of recognition using the imagination, maybe thinking of situations you've been in with this person, circumstances, right, using the imagination, using a little bit of phrases, using the mind, right, images, words. And then doing that for a bit of time and then seeing if we can kind of come internal with it with that same quality and just noticing how the shift of that might feel energetically. And we'll see how this goes. So again, just taking a few moments to let yourself settle into a posture that feels upright, relaxed. Maybe just finding a posture that feels like you're holding your body with some kindness. What does the body need right now? And we will start and end with the bell. And so just as we begin to just start with a bit of an experiment, to just actually say the word kindness in your mind and just see if it can drop into the body and notice how that's received. Kindness. Kindness. Friendliness. Friend. And allowing yourself to settle into the present time experience by once again opening up to the question of, am I aware? What am I aware of? And what is the attitude of mind? To inquire with that now. What is the attitude of mind right now? Sometimes this can be recognized as a kind of energy, felt sense just behind the eyes at the temple. Down through the hollow space of the mouth into the heart center. Breathing in, breathing out. And to just see if we can develop an attitude of openness, interest, and a sense of wonder, wondering what will this be like? What will this practice be like for me tonight? And so allowing your awareness to sustain in the present time through the body and different sense experiences, to stay connected to the direct experience as best you can. But to begin to observe the mind in your memories and imagination, and to just bring to mind anybody that you know, a friend, a pet, any person for which the relationship is not complicated, an easeful relationship. Somebody who has been supportive to you. A good friend. Just bringing that image to mind, how you see them in the mind's eye. And maybe noticing there might be some circumstances or memories or experiences that you've had with this person. All the ways in which you've enjoyed being with this person. And just seeing if you can feel into your body or into your heart or anywhere into your experience where you can recognize that you have this wish for them to have well-being in their life, to be healthy, to be safe, to be happy. Wishing for them to be at ease in this world, just as this world is right now. as we generate this goodwill, this good wishing, well wishing, holding their image, feeling the body, opening to the fullness of the experience now to include them. May you be at ease. May you be at ease in your life. May you be at peace. May you be at peace in your life. And may you be content. May you be content with things just as they are right now. Being aware of this person's presence in your life and your experience. And seeing if you can even get a felt sense of this goodwill, this well-wishing. May you be at ease. May you be at ease in your life. May you be at peace. May you be at peace in your life. And may you be content. May you be content with your life just as it is right now. And just noticing what happens in the body, in the heart, just after the phrase is said, to see if there's any resonance. What arises in the mind experience. And just revisiting, coming into contact with any image or memory or experience you have of this person. Appreciating any way they've supported you over the years. good friend. I'm just seeing if you can recognize this felt sense of well-wishing, inclining the mind towards. May you be content. May you be content in your life. May you be at peace. May you be at peace in your life just as it is. And extending outward. May you be content. May you be content in your life, however your life is right now. I wish for you to be content. And then just sweeping through the body, noticing if there's any tension or tightness that might be there, relaxing. And just returning back to this open field of awareness, resting. And then just seeing if there's any energy or warmth or felt sense from the practice down from the tip of the chin through the neck, throat, the chest, the belly, the heart center. And just taking a few moments to allow yourself to feel into any sense of goodness or kindness that might be there. Allowing that to be the object of attention, of awareness. Could be strong, could be subtle, but somewhere in the area of the body, from the chin to the belly button. And just letting that area be as soft as you can. And seeing if you can begin to extend this same energy, this intention towards yourself, offering yourself this kind friendliness. May I be at ease. May I be at peace. May I be content in this moment, just as it is right now. And then saying the phrase, generating the phrase, but seeing what happens in the space to really feel into the moment, the experience after the phrase is said, to see what, is there anything that's resonant? May I be at ease? See if you can really allow yourself to hear it. May I be peaceful? May I be content in this moment, just this moment here now. Can I be content just as it is right here, right now? Just allowing myself to be as free as I possibly can right now, however amount of freedom there is. Letting that just be enough. As you continue to come back into the experience, to begin to see for yourself, what is the metta word for you? What is it that you long for here now? Ease, peacefulness, free, may I be free. Maybe it's just, may I be okay right now? May I be okay with things just as they are? May I meet myself with kindness. May I meet myself with friendliness. Of these various phrases, these ideas, which one is most resonant in your experience? And can you continue to just offer that to yourself? Both as an attitude of mind and an object that can be felt and that can be known. And as you sit here and fully experience your mind, my mind, my friend, my mind. My friend, my mind. My mind, my friend.